Ladies and gentlemen, the joy.
All right. Next on the to-do list. When we take over the DNC.
Oh, Michael.
Ashley.
My name is Ashley Judd.
Ashley Judd is here.
And I am a feminist. And I want to say hello to Independence Avenue in the back. All the way down to 17th Street.
Wow.
And I bring you words from Nina Donovan, a 19-year-old in Middle Tennessee, and she has given me the privilege of telling you what she has to say. I am a nasty woman. I'm not as nasty as a man who looks like he bathes in Cheeto dust. A man whose words are a diss track to America. Electoral college sanctioned hate speech contaminating this national anthem. I'm not as nasty as Confederate flags being tattooed across my city. Maybe the South actually is gonna rise again. Maybe for some, it never really fell. Blacks are still in shackles and graves just for being black. Slavery has been reinterpreted as the prison system in front of people who see melanin as animal skin. I am not as nasty as a swastika painted on a pride flag. And I didn't know devils could be resurrected, but I feel Hitler in these streets. A mustache traded for a toupee. Nazis renamed the cabinet electroconversion therapy, the new gas chamber, shaming the gay out of America, turning rainbows into suicide notes. I am not as nasty as racism, fraud, conflict of interest, homophobia, sexual assault, transphobia, white supremacy, misogyny, ignorance, white privilege. I'm not as nasty as using little girls like Pokemon before their bodies have even developed. I am not as nasty as your own daughter being your favorite sex symbol. Like your wet dreams infused with your own genes. But yeah, I'm a nasty woman. A loud, vulgar, proud woman. I'm not nasty like the combo of Trump and Pence being served up to me in my voting booth. I'm nasty like the battles my grandmothers fought to get me into that voting booth. I'm nasty like the fight for wage equality. Scarlett Johansson, why were the female actors paid less than half of what the male actors earned last year? See, even when we do go into higher paying jobs, our wages are still cut with blades sharpened by testosterone. Why is the work of a black woman and a Hispanic woman worth only 63 and 54 cents of a white man's privileged daughter? This is not a feminist myth. This is inequality. So we are not here to be debunked. We are here to be respected. We are here to be nasty. I'm nasty like my blood stains on my bed sheets. We don't actually choose if and when to have our periods. Believe me, if we could, some of us would. We don't like throwing away our favorite pairs of underpants. Tell me, why are pads and Tampax still taxed? Ooh, that was a brand name. Why are tampons and pads still taxed when Viagra and Rogaine are not? Is your erection really more than protecting the sacred, messy part of my womanhood? Is the blood stain on my jeans more embarrassing than the thinning of your hair. I know it is hard to look at your own entitlement and privilege. You may be afraid of the truth. I am unafraid to be honest. It may sound petty, bringing up a few extra cents. It adds up to the pile of change I have yet to see in my country. I can't see. My eyes are too busy praying to my feet, hoping you don't mistake eye contact for wanting physical contact. Half my life, I have been zipping up my smile, hoping you don't think I want to unzip your jeans. I am unafraid to be nasty because I am nasty, like Susan, Elizabeth, Eleanor, Amelia, Rosa, Gloria, Condoleezza, Sonia, Malala, Michelle, Hillary. And our pussies ain't for grabbing. Therefore, reminding you that our walls are stronger than America's ever will be. Our pussies are for our pleasure. They are for birthing new generations of filthy, vulgar, nasty, proud Christian, Muslim, Buddhist, Sikh, you name it, for new generations of nasty women. So if you, a nasty woman, or you love one who is, let me hear you say, hell yeah. Hell yeah. Hell yeah. I love you. Thank you.
So I woke up this morning, picked up the Washington Post, and the headline read, Trump takes power. I don't think so. Here's the power. Here's the majority of America right here. We are the majority. New president vows to end American carnage. Mr. Trump, we are here to vow to end the Trump carnage. I'll pick that up later. Recycle. A reporter asked me on the way up the stairs here, what do you hope to accomplish with this demonstration? I said, well, I would say if you just look that way, we've already accomplished it. Shit. The majority of Americans did not want Donald J. Trump in the White House.
Folks, I hope you can hear that. You may have to turn up the volume a little bit.
Okay.
But anyway, let's go back to this.
The standard demonstration speech. You got a lot of great speakers here today. Oh my God, I got to listen to Gloria Steinem. How cool was that?
This is Chicago's finest internet radio show, making a world a better place, one show at a time. The George Warner Jr. Show is now on the air. Take it away, Dad.
All right, welcome to the George Warner Jr. Show, everybody. That was a little bit from the rally from last weekend. I thought Ashley Judd was just out of the... I mean, she was just so magnificent. I mean, if you never saw any of her movies, you should probably go watch every one of them. But this is the... best performance I think she'll ever give. And they are choosing, the Oscar nominations are out, of course. But I don't know. I think they forgot one person. I think they forgot Ashley Judd. They didn't see this. And, you know, I mean, she just tore it up last weekend at the women's rally against Trump. And it was fabulous. It was fabulous. And I have some clips here that I'm going to be playing throughout the month, maybe throughout the year. And Trump. I just got through eating, folks, so my mouth probably will not work too well today. Anyway, Trump is still insisting that he lost the popular vote because illegals were voting. This is crazy. This guy has enough on his plate, and he still is thinking about his own ego. It's all about him, all about Trump and not about the rest of us. I mean, he's just crazy. The guy is nuts. They're saying it all over cable television. There is something he has. There's a mental lapse or something or other. This guy, and I believe it. I believe there is, if you look at Trump, Donald Trump, there is some mental disability about this guy. You know, I mean, anybody who just focuses on himself all the time and not on the needs of the people, he's signing some executive orders, and he claims that he's going to have a Supreme Court nominee and he's going to sit this guy. You know, I don't know. He's wishy-washy. He's all over the place. You don't know what's going on. He just resurrected the Keystone Pipeline. He's going to gut Obamacare. He's undoing Obama, totally undoing Obama. All right, we'll be right back, folks. We're going to do this.
Ladies and gentlemen, the George Wilder Jr. Show has now arrived.
Chicago's finest internet radio show, making a world a better place, one show at a time. The George Wilder Jr. Show is now on the air. Take it away, Dad.
Thank you. Wow. Clearing my throat there. All righty. The White House, they're still doubling down on Trump's claim that, you know, illegals had something to do with him not getting the popular vote. That's insane. Insane. And also stating again, he has frozen federal housing, federal workers hiring freeze. Sorry, it's a hiring freeze. He's frozen. And a lot of workers are pissed off about that. You know, so this guy is doing his deadly deed quickly. And wow, he has a press secretary. This guy is an asshole, totally asshole. And there are still protests going on around the country about Trump. Okay, he's gutting the ACA, American Care. In other words, Obamacare, put it that way, with nothing to replace it with. I don't think the Republicans are going to replace Obamacare with anything. If they do come up with a replacement, to some people, it's not going to be as good as Obamacare. I never thought much of Obamacare. I thought it could have been a lot better. But these guys aren't going to replace it with anything. But there are some people who are getting some really good use out of this health care. And the Republicans want to take it away. I believe they want to take it away for one reason. They don't like it being called Obamacare. They don't want his signature on anything. While he was in office, and definitely while he's not in office. So we have so much power, folks. So much power in the wrong hands. You know, a lot of people probably disagree. 347-857-1762. We have a lot of power in the wrong hands. This guy is, to a lot of us, he's mentally unstable. You know, and this is going to be a long 4 years if it gets that far. I don't have a clue if it will make it that far, if it gets that far. You know, so, but I've said several times on this show that, and others, that since he's president, I want him to be successful. It doesn't mean that I'm supporting him. It doesn't mean that, you know, I'm with him on everything. It's just that he's the president of the United States, and if he's successful in some way of not tearing down America, I mean, we all should get behind him. I think, you know, I know a lot of people are going to say, "Oh, George, hell no, that ain't going to happen." But you want him to be successful, because if he's successful, America is successful. You know, I didn't vote for him. I'm not a Republican. I wouldn't have voted for him. Whether he does 4 years or 6 months in office, you know, I don't know. He's doing some damage as I speak here, and he gets Trump from my observation, he's getting off on signing these executive orders. I mean, he's feeling really damn good about it. I mean, we're gonna forget all about Obama was in office. The way this guy is doing stuff, because Obama, he used his executive powers, but he didn't use them to the max that he should have. You know, he acted as if he was afraid to use his executive powers. Remember when Obama was coming into office and all he was talking about with the Republicans were compromise. Compromise. You don't hear anything like compromise coming out of Trump's mouth. But all through Obama's presidency, it was compromise, compromise, compromise. And the Republicans slapped him in the face, said, no, 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 no. And there are plenty of times for Obama to use his executive powers to do something great for African Americans. That never happened. That never happened. And also Obama's tenure in office, there was never that transparency as he promised when he was running for the first time for president of the United States. It was none of that. I mean, Obama did some underhanded things that we, you, I, America, and the world never knew about. But we're finding out about him now because he's officially not president anymore. He's officially a citizen, just like you or me or anybody. And Donald Trump holds the power. And that's dangerous. And now we got to figure out, focus on Donald Trump. And I want to say some of these marches, I saw them yesterday. I mean, during the weekend, I participated in one or two of them. And these marches, the women march was just great, folks. It was just wonderful. If you were out there and you had a great time, and it was just seeing it, just seeing it. And Trump is belittling it. He's belittling the march. He's belittling the protest around the world because he's saying that he could have won the popular vote if a lot of illegals didn't vote. He's always bringing up this type of shit with no proof, no evidence, no nothing. And then his minions, the people, his yes men, the people who are kissing his ass, they are parroting everything that their bosses say. Everything that their bosses say. Well, they're getting paid. He's paying them, so paying them. This is a crop of liars. And it's just pitiful that we're in a time like this, that where we're going to have to pay more attention to this administration and what they're doing than probably paying attention to what's going on in our own lives, because there's people are saying this guy's going to blow us off the earth. It could happen. He's got a short attention span. He's thin skinned. He gets pissed off at the minutest thing because nobody's giving him his props, you know? So we're really going to have to, pay attention to this administration. You know, I mean, it's really nothing that anybody, a part of this administration, the Trump administration, could even tell me. I'm just, you know what? I'm wondering what his State of the Union address is going to be like. Wow. If it's anything like his inaugural speech, we're going to be in trouble, folks. We're going to be in trouble. All right, we're going to do a little thing on domestic violence. Here we go.
I'm here today to talk about a disturbing question, which has an equally disturbing answer. My topic is the secrets of domestic violence. And the question I'm going to tackle is the one question everyone always asks. Why does she stay? Why would anyone stay with a man who beats her? I'm not a psychiatrist, a social worker, or an expert in domestic violence. I'm just one woman with a story to tell. I was 22. I had just graduated from Harvard College. I'd moved to New York City for my first job as a writer and editor at 17 Magazine. I had my first apartment, my first little green American Express card, and I had a very big secret. My secret was that I had this gun loaded with hollow point bullets pointed at my head by the man who I thought was my soulmate many, many times. The man who I loved more than anybody on earth held a gun to my head and threatened to kill me more times than I can even remember. I'm here to tell you the story of crazy love, a psychological trap disguised as love, one that millions of women and even a few men fall into every year. It may even be your story. I don't look like a typical domestic violence survivor. I have a BA in English from Harvard College, an MBA in marketing from Wharton Business School. I spent most of my career working for Fortune 500 companies, including Johnson & Johnson, Leo Burnett, and The Washington Post. I've been married for almost 20 years to my second husband, and we have three kids together. My dog is a black lab, and I drive a Honda Odyssey minivan. So my first message for you is that domestic violence happens to everyone. All races, all religions, all income and education levels. It's everywhere. And my second message is that everyone thinks domestic violence happens to women, that it's a women's issue. Not exactly. Over 85% of abusers are men. And domestic abuse happens only in intimate, interdependent, long-term relationships. In other words, in families. The last place we would want or expect to find violence. Which is one reason domestic abuse is so confusing. I would have told you myself that I was the last person on earth who would stay with a man who beats me. But in fact, I was a very typical victim because of my age. I was 22. And in the United States, women ages 16 to 24 are three times as likely to be domestic violence victims as women of other ages. And over 500 women and girls this age are killed every year by abusive partners, boyfriends and husbands in the United States. I was also a very typical victim because I knew nothing about domestic violence, its warning signs or its patterns. I met Connor on a cold, rainy January night. He sat next to me on the New York City subway, and he started chatting me up. He told me two things. One was that he, too, had just graduated from an Ivy League school, and that he worked at a very impressive Wall Street bank. But what made the biggest impression on me that first meeting was that he was smart and funny, and he looked like a farm boy. He had these big cheeks, these big apple cheeks, and this wheat blonde hair, and he seemed so sweet. One of the smartest things Connor did from the very beginning was to create the illusion that I was the dominant partner in the relationship. He did this, especially at the beginning, by idolizing me. We started dating, and he loved everything about me, that I was smart, that I'd gone to Harvard, that I was passionate about helping teenage girls and my job. He wanted to know everything about my family and my childhood, my hopes and dreams. Connor believed in me as a writer and a woman in a way that no one else ever had. And he also created a magical atmosphere of trust between us by confessing his secret, which was that as a very young boy starting at age 4, he had been savagely and repeatedly physically abused by his stepfather. And the abuse had gotten so bad that he had had to drop out of school in 8th grade, even though he was very smart. And he'd spent almost 20 years rebuilding his life, which is why that Ivy League degree and the Wall Street job and his bright, shiny future meant so much to him. If you had told me that this smart, funny, sensitive man who adored me would one day dictate whether or not I wore makeup, how short my skirts were, where I lived, what jobs I took, who my friends were, and where I spent Christmas, I would have laughed at you. Because there was not a hint of violence or control or anger in Connor at the beginning. I didn't know that the first stage in any domestic violence relationship is to seduce and charm the victim. I also didn't know that the second step is to isolate the victim. Now, Connor did not come home one day and announce, you know, hey, all this Romeo and Juliet stuff has been great, but I need to move into the next phase where I isolate you and I abuse you. So I need to get you out of this apartment where the neighbors can hear you scream and out of this city where you have friends and family and coworkers who can see the bruises. Instead, Connor came home one Friday evening and he told me that he had quit his job that day, his dream job. And he said that he had quit his job because of me, because I had made him feel so safe and loved that he didn't need to prove himself on Wall Street anymore. And he just wanted to get out of the city and away from his abusive, dysfunctional family and move to a tiny town in New England where he could start his life over with me by his side. Now, the last thing I wanted to do was leave New York and my dream job. But I thought you made sacrifices for your soulmate. So I agreed. And I quit my job, and Connor and I left Manhattan together. I had no idea I was falling into crazy love, that I was walking headfirst into a carefully laid physical, financial, and psychological trap. The next step in the domestic violence pattern is to introduce the threat of violence and see how she reacts. And here's where those guns come in. As soon as we moved to New England, you know that place where Connor was supposed to feel so safe? He bought 3 guns. He kept one in the glove compartment of our car. He kept one under the pillows on our bed. And the 3rd one he kept in his pocket at all times. And he said that he needed those guns because of the trauma he'd experienced as a young boy. He needed them to feel protected. But those guns were really a message for me. And even though he hadn't raised a hand to me, my life was already in grave danger every minute of every day. Connor first physically attacked me 5 days before our wedding. It was 7 a.m. I still had on my nightgown. I was working on my computer trying to finish a freelance writing assignment, and I got frustrated. And Connor used my anger as an excuse to put both of his hands around my neck and to squeeze so tightly that I could not breathe or scream. And he used the chokehold to hit my head repeatedly against the wall. 5 days later, the 10 bruises on my neck had just faded, and I put on my mother's wedding dress, and I married him. Despite what had happened, I was sure we were going to live happily ever after, because I loved him, and he loved me so much. And he was very, very sorry. He had just been really stressed out by the wedding and by becoming a family with me. It was an isolated incident, and he was never going to hurt me again. It happened twice more on the honeymoon. The first time, I was driving to find a secret beach, and I got lost. And he punched me in the side of my head so hard that the other side of my head repeatedly hit the driver's side window. And then a few days later, driving home from our honeymoon, he got frustrated by traffic, and he threw a cold Big Mac in my face. Connor proceeded to beat me once or twice a week for the next 2.5 years of our marriage. I was mistaken in thinking that I was unique and alone in this situation. 1 in 3 American women experiences domestic violence or stalking at some point in her life. And the CDC reports that 15 million children are abused every year. 15 million. So actually, I was in very good company. Back to my question. Why did I stay? The answer is easy. I didn't know he was abusing me. Even though he held those loaded guns to my head, pushed me downstairs, threatened to kill our dog, pulled the key out of the car ignition as I drove down the highway, poured coffee grinds on my head as I dressed for a job interview, I never once thought of myself as a battered wife. Instead, I was a very strong woman in love with a deeply troubled man, and I was the only person on earth who could help Connor face his demons. The other question everybody asks is, why doesn't she just leave? Why didn't I walk out? I could have left any time. To me, this is the saddest and most painful question that people ask, because we victims know something you usually don't. It's incredibly dangerous to leave an abuser, because the final step in the domestic violence pattern is kill her. Over 70% of domestic violence murders happen after the victim has ended the relationship, after she's gotten out, because then the abuser has nothing left to lose. Other outcomes include long-term stalking, even after the abuser remarries, denial of financial resources, and manipulation of the family court system to terrify the victim and her children, who are regularly forced by family court judges to spend unsupervised time with the man who beat their mother. And still we ask, why doesn't she just leave? I was able to leave because of one final sadistic beating that broke through my denial. I realized that the man who I loved so much was going to kill me if I let him. So I broke the silence. I told everyone. The police, my neighbors, my friends and family, total strangers. And I'm here today because you all helped me. We tend to stereotype victims as grisly headlines, self-destructive women, damaged goods. The question, why does she stay, is code for some people for it's her fault for staying, as if victims intentionally choose to fall in love with men intent upon destroying us. But since publishing Crazy Love, I have heard hundreds of stories from men and women who also got out, who learned an invaluable life lesson from what happened, and who rebuilt lives, joyous, happy lives, as employees, wives, and mothers, lives completely free of violence. Like me, because it turns out that I'm actually a very typical domestic violence victim and a typical domestic violence survivor. I remarried a kind and gentle man. We have those three kids. I have that black lab, and I have that minivan. What I will never have again, ever, is a loaded gun held to my head by someone who says that he loves me. Now, right now, maybe you're thinking, wow, this is fascinating. Or, wow, how stupid was she? But this whole time, I've actually been talking about you. I promise you, there are several people listening to me right now who are currently being abused, or who were abused as children, or who are abusers themselves. Abuse could be affecting your daughter, your sister, your best friend, right now. I was able to end my own crazy love story by breaking the silence. I'm still breaking the silence today. It's my way of helping other victims. And it's my final request of you. Talk about what you heard here. Abuse thrives only in silence. You have the power to end domestic violence simply by shining a spotlight on it. We victims need everyone. We need every one of you to understand the secrets of domestic violence. Show abuse the light of day by talking about it with your children, your coworkers, your friends and family. Recast survivors as wonderful, lovable people with full futures. Recognize the early signs of violence and conscientiously intervene, de-escalate it, show victims a safe way out. Together, we can make our beds, our dinner tables, and our families the safe and peaceful oases they should be. Thank you.
All right, that was great. That was on domestic violence. Thank you for that. Thank you for that. Thank you for that. All right, it looks like Trump is trying to stifle free speech, the freedom of the press. This is bad, folks, really bad. Federal agencies told to restrict their communications. The limits of public communication appears to be targeting agencies that are charged with overseeing environmental and scientific policy, prompting criticism from officials within the agencies and from the outside and from outside groups focused on climate change. A memo to the EPA. Yeah, he's limiting the EPA, folks. Communication staff said no social media will be going out, and incoming media requests will be carefully screened. So the Trump is at it again. I mean, we are in some really dark times, folks, with this guy. I mean, he doesn't trust the media. He doesn't trust the newspapers. He doesn't trust the American people. he's putting himself and his putting himself and his family in a box, you know, in a box, right? And everybody else is outside looking in. And he's going to be very, very protective of that, you know, because he's still saying that the illegals cost him the popular vote. The only thing that cost him the popular vote is sexual harassment against women. I mean, this guy is just, I mean, he's just, he's not fit for office, folks. That's, I mean, 347-857-1762. He's just not fit for office. I mean, I've seen this. If I thought Donald Trump was fit for office, I'd say it. I would come out and say it. I see this and I would come out and say it. I'm not saying these things just be saying them or because you may think I don't like him. I don't care 2 cents for Donald Trump. But like I always say, I want him to prevail, but I don't want him to put his foot on the back of my neck or your neck because he's pissed off because he didn't win the popular vote. What the hell? He won the most crucial vote of all, the electoral vote. Why is he pissed off? Why is he lying? And his staff is lying and they're all lying. And they're, in other words, folks, this is just a big con. That's all it is. Everybody who's anybody was saying that this guy is a con, and we see the con at work. He conned himself in the office. Now he's trying to con us into believing that he should have won the popular vote, that the illegals kept him from doing that. That is totally bullshit. Sorry, I've used this kind of language on the show sometimes because I get so passionate about what I'm speaking of. And this is just crazy. We've got nincompoops in the White House, fools, liars, people who think falsehoods are the new facts, you know, alternative facts. This is just wild and crazy, as Steve Martin used to say all the time on Saturday Night Live. This is wild and crazy. I mean, we are in some really dark times with this guy. Now he's limiting how much you can talk to him. He's limiting himself how much he's going to talk to reporters and the world and the people. This guy, he is Donald Trump. Donald Trump, he thinks he's king of the damn world. He wants to be king of the world. And people are not letting him be king of the world. And he's pissed off about that. It's all about Donald Trump. It's not about America. It's about him. Donald Trump, it's about his ego. This guy is so selfish. It's a damn shame. It's all about Donald Trump, not you, not me, not anybody. But he's going to use the power of the White House to say, yeah, he's concerned about us. Donald Trump wants to be liked so bad. He wants to be loved by each and every one of us so badly that it hurts, because that's not reality. It hurts. And I don't like spending the hour and a half that I have on this show from Monday through Thursday to talk about Donald Trump. I think I'm coming down with the flu or something. I don't want to do that, but hey, wow, we're in a time where we have to really focus on what this guy's saying and what he does, because he doesn't look like he looks sick to me. He looks like he should be in an examining room or something. He looks sick. He looks like, you know, there's something wrong physically or mentally, and probably some sort of sickness he has. I mean, he's 70 years old. He looks a lot older than that, and you can clearly tell he's overweight. And I'm pretty sure he's going to keep all of his medical his medical history and his medical records away from the American people, just like he said the other day. One of his minions said that Donald Trump was not going to ever release his taxes ever. And she went on to say that because she felt, or that he felt, that nobody cared about his taxes. That's a bold-faced lie. Everybody who's anybody in this country wanted to see Donald Trump's taxes. To say that nobody cared, that's another bold-faced lie. This administration, 2017, this administration, I mean, these people are a bunch of bold-faced liars. And every time they lie on camera and throw it out there to us, it's just a con. That's all it is. It's a con. And now this mouthpiece of Donald Trump, we call her, her name is Kellyanne Conway. This woman ought to be thrown out of the White House onto the curb. I mean, she is just one of the biggest liars and spinners of Trump's administration. And Trump likes it. He likes it. He loves it. You know, because he's now giving her Secret Service protection paid by you and me, the taxpayers. And I know a lot of us are pissed off. And she knows it. They know it. But, you know, Donald Trump is in the White House. Only thing we can do is bitch and argue. And we can get out here, folks, we can get out here and do what we did last weekend, and that's to protest Donald Trump being in the White House and doing all of this, trying to do all this shit to the people out here. And my understanding that there was some protests tonight in the city of Chicago. Yeah. There are a little less than 100 people, I heard, but they were protesting Donald Trump. So this is not over. This is not over. I mean, we had this great, great, great rally and protest of women groups in every state all over the world, at least in some countries, okay? And it was just awesome to see. It was a beautiful sight. I'm pretty sure the Trump administration didn't like it. They were spinning it their way, but we saw it another way. But this is what the Trump people see. They see things differently because they're a bunch of con artists. Con artists. That's all that it is, you know? And but it was beautiful. And I did manage to get some sound bites from those meetings, and I'm gonna play them time and time on the show again. Here's Scarlett O'Hara, not Scarlett O'Hara, Scarlett Johansson, the actress.
Johansson, wow, messing up today. Speaking right now here in Washington. I want to listen in.
And when the time came for STD and cancer screenings, no judgment, no questions asked. Planned Parenthood provided a safe place where I could be treated with gentle guidance. Now, I may have been 15 and surprisingly self-sufficient, but I'm sure there isn't one person here who has not been helped by Planned Parenthood directly or otherwise. When I knew I was coming to speak on behalf of women's reproductive and health issues, every single one of my girlfriends had a story about Planned Parenthood. They saved me so many times. One of my best girlfriends confided in me, saying, "They saved my ass and some other parts too." When I found out I had precancerous signs I never would have known about without my annual checkups, and her speech grew more emphatic and emotional as she described how the organization had helped her decide between treatment options. She was able to make some difficult decisions, deciding what was right for her body, and her then partner, without anyone else's interference. My sister also used Planned Parenthood services for years after moving states. She'd been living her whole life in New York City, pursuing her dream to move to California. She had no contacts and no health insurance, but was able to regularly see a doctor at a Planned Parenthood clinic for screenings, advice, birth control, and checkups. For the more than 2.5 million patients a year that rely on Planned Parenthood services for cancer and STD screenings, birth control, safe abortion, and pregnancy planning, these are uncertain and anxious times. Lawmakers in 24 states have tried to block patients from receiving care at Planned Parenthood. Congress has voted to limit access to reproductive services 9 times. Boo! Yes, boo! There are very real and devastating consequences to limiting access to what should be considered basic health care. For millions of Americans, Planned Parenthood is often the only trustworthy and affordable clinic providing safe education, sex education, safe abortion, and life-saving services. President Trump, I did not vote for you. That.
All right, welcome to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Blog Talk Radio out of the city of Chicago, the state of Illinois. Folks, we are in some trying times. We are in some dark times. We must fight for an America without hate. We must fight for an America without bigotry. We must fight for an America without racism. We must fight for our rights. We must fight to continue to be Americans. Some of those rights are being threatened, taken away. But we have to get out here and fight the good fight. You know, and it has to be done, folks. It has to be in a non-violent way. We know how to do things non-violently. So let's go out and make our voices heard, fighting non-violently.
Donald Trump is a con man. That is basically the easiest way to describe Donald Trump, the human being. And a lot of people knew this. We knew as soon as he announced his run for president, every horrible con he'd pulled off on the American public in the past. Trump University, Trump Stakes, how he screwed over all his workers. The man did everything possible to make a few extra dollars at the expense of everyone else, regardless of the fact that he was delivering shoddy products and lies. So we knew that. A lot of the American public knew it. A lot of Trump supporters understood that fact. But they still voted for him. And the question is, why did so many Americans fall for this Donald Trump con? Think about this. I know we've talked about the racism and the sexism, and yes, that played a huge role. Hillary Clinton's lack of talking about the issues played a role in people going to Trump. But why were they so desperate that they would fall for such obvious lies? We have a real problem in the United States, not as intense as the racism and the sexism, but there is a psychological problem with people in the United States. And that problem is that we're always trying to find the hero. We have a very severe and almost borderline disgusting case of hero worship in the United States. We're desperate to find anyone who says something that could indicate that they might do something that could possibly help our current situation. And Donald Trump understood that. That is one of the first traits of a con man, is psychological manipulation. And that's what he did with a lot of this country. He promised them these great things that they didn't even know that they wanted, like a wall between U.S. and Mexico. Because he found out that people who are unhappy about their situation are desperate for somebody to blame and desperate for somebody to come along and say that they're going to fix it. Hero worship and blame. And that's what we're looking at right now with the American psyche. You know, maybe the Midwesterner whose job got cut because his company moved overseas, maybe Trump convinced him that if we build that wall between us and Mexico, your job's coming back. It's the Mexicans that stole your job. Has nothing to do with the fact that your industry simply went out of business due to a lack of demand, due to basic economics. No. It's somebody else's to blame. Put your faith in me, and I'll make it better. And that's what happened. Because Americans wanted that hero, that, you know, unsung outsider establishment political vigilante to swoop in and save the day, and they were desperate for it. That's why a lot of Republicans go back and look at Ronald Reagan and say, what a great man. He was amazing. He was awesome. It's false hero worship. Reagan was terrible. There is no way to say that Reagan was a good president. He killed unions, Iran-Contra. I mean, good God, the economy went into recessions constantly during his tenure. But Republicans don't see that. They see him as just this average guy who came in and golly gee, he did a great job. He's a hero. No, he's not. He is not. Just like Donald Trump is not. And we've seen it. Because once a con man gets what they want, the con is over and they can do whatever they want. And that's what happened with Donald Trump. The second the election was over, all those promises to drain the swamp, well, it turns out he's picking the worst people from that swamp to run his administration. And suddenly the public, Trump voters, not the whole public, only the people dumb enough to vote for Donald Trump, are like, oh my God, I've made a huge mistake. And you did. You were conned because you were desperate. And that's not necessarily your fault. And this is where the Democrats need to come in and explain what that party stands for. If they were to actually go out there and talk to these people who were desperate for a hero, these people would understand that the Democratic Party does represent them. They are fighting for them, or at least they used to. Today, it's almost hard to distinguish between a Democrat and Republican. But 4 years ago, 8 years ago, if we would have done that, we would have beat Donald Trump before he even entered the race. He probably wouldn't have entered the race. People are desperate for somebody to come along and make their lives a little better. They want that hero. The Democratic Party could have been that hero. But instead, they let con man Trump come in and fool millions of voters whose lives are going to be much, much worse in the next 4 years because the Democratic Party didn't do anything to prevent it.
All right, welcome to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Blog Talk Radio out of the city of Chicago, the state of Illinois. Folks, we are in some trying times. We are in some dark times. We must fight for an America without hate. We must fight for an America without bigotry. We must fight for an America without racism. We must fight for our rights. We must fight to continue to be Americans. Some of those rights are being threatened, taken away. But we have to get out here and fight the good fight. You know, and it has to be done, folks. It has to be in a non-violent way. We know how to do things non-violently. So let's go out and make our voices heard, fighting non-violently.
I'm Keith Olbermann, and this is The Resistance. Trump has promised a news conference Wednesday. I'll believe it when I see it. He has every reason to cancel it or simply ignore his promise. The trick worked with the news conference about his wife's reported immigration irregularities. The trick worked with the news conference he scheduled for December 15th to address his potential business conflicts of interest. The trick worked when he promised for last Tuesday or Wednesday revelations about Russia's hacking of the election. Of course, Trump has broken his promise. It's a Trump promise. It's time for Donald Trump to resign as president. Admittedly, it's been an interesting couple of days, but for any patriotic American capable of
not getting one, but that's not going to happen.
This is enough. If you voted for Trump or you support him now or you're saying give him a chance, again, I'm not going to yell at you or call you names. I'm not going to try to argue any policies. I'm not going to debate the size of his crowds, nor whatever your conclusions are about Saturday's marches. In fact, I'm going to compliment you on your generosity toward him and the sincerity of your belief in his promises and your natural, your commendable desire to see him and thus see our country succeed. But this man is not of sound mind. In office, faster and more frighteningly than at any point in the campaign, over the span of just a long weekend, really, Trump has proved that not only will he lie to America about anything big or small, but that just as importantly, he will lie to himself about anything big or small. And more troubling yet, he will compel men weaker even than himself to lie on his behalf about anything big or small. And worst of all, the lies will convince some people, and they will convince one person especially dangerous in particular. Donald Trump. Because what Trump does not believe cannot be true. And that way lies madness and lies every evil imaginable, including the end of this country in a literal sense, perhaps the end of civilization. Because like somebody who's strung out on drugs or somebody who's living in a complete dreamlike state caused by profound, pulsating narcissism, he will not believe that the outcome of any of his actions could be failure or disaster or even something that could be harmful to himself. A man who could accuse the Central Intelligence Agency of trying to undermine him and ask rhetorically of the conduct of that agency, quote, are we living in Nazi Germany? A man who could do that and then 10 days later go and stand in front of the shrine of its fallen agents and insist with a straight face, with every word he said and motion that he made suggesting he really believes this, he could say, quote, they sort of made it sound like I had a feud with the intelligence community, and I just want to let you know the reason you're the number one stop is it is exactly the opposite. A man who could insist to those same men and women at the CIA that it stopped raining the moment he started to give his inaugural address when you saw the rain falling on him. That is the kind of man who could convince himself that it would be just fine to start a nuclear war. Because, of course, he would survive the retaliatory attack, and so would his family, and so would whatever people he thinks are his friends, or to use his word, his fans. Of course they would all survive the retaliation because he's Donald Trump. And bad things cannot happen to Donald Trump. At the CIA, Trump told the agents there that he has, quote, a running war with the media. He does not have a running war with the media. He has a running war with reality. His reality is what he says it is. He has an advisor who came out and said Sunday that when you deliberately contradict reality, that that is not lying or deceiving, but rather that's using, quoting her, alternative facts. You try alternative facts in your life for 1 hour. Let me know how it goes. Drive on whichever side of the road you want to. Stop wearing the safety glasses. Let the kids use the stove and the power tools. Write checks for money you don't have. Because ignoring the warnings and instructions is not courting a disaster. It's just a set of alternative facts. This is crazy. And even if, God willing, it never gets to the point where this kind of delusional thinking is employed during an international crisis or here at home during some kind of threat or disaster, even if Trump's ability to turn off reality like a light switch never actually threatens us and our children and all we know, what does it mean about that key promise that he made to you to unrig the system, to level the playing field, to never be beholden to Goldman Sachs as he claimed his opponent was, like he promised, like he seemed to promise before he hired three people from Goldman Sachs and one from Wells Fargo and one from Rothschild Investments? You knew this before that speech at the CIA or this crazy argument about how big the crowds at the inauguration were or whether it was sunny and only he could see
it was sunny.
You may have even known this before you voted for him and you just hoped it was going to go away when he took over.
But I didn't vote for him.
Going away. It's getting worse.
Don't say that.
He's crazy.
I didn't
vote
for him.
We will all be lucky to survive having had him in charge. And even if we do survive, it will still be the greatest crisis of our lives. all our lives. Look, I don't want a President Pence, but I will take him and his policies. And I'll fight the policies, but the man, we can debate the man in 2020 in the election. This is not about policies or conservative or liberal or rigged systems or marches or making America great again. This is about a man not in his right mind who now has nuclear weapons. It is the greatest crisis of all of our lives right now. But together we can fix it peacefully. He just has to resign, or if he won't, there are provisions for the Republicans to remove him because he is so sick. We can fix it, and then we can sleep at night again. And you and I can go back to yelling at each other about politics and enjoying ourselves again. I thank you for listening.
All right, no problem. That was Keith Olbermann, as always. He's a mainstay on this show. Let's twist, let's kind of change the subject a little bit. All right, Chicago police investigating cop. I talked about this a little bit on the show yesterday. Chicago police investigating a cop caught in a video throwing coffee on a motorcycle. On a motorcyclist. I have the flu today, folks. I don't feel very well, so my voice may be, and my diction may be a little slurred. Anyway, I saw the video, folks. I saw the video. The cop, this was Chicago police, all right? Downtown Chicago. There was a motorcycle. Motorcade, motorcycles, just a motorcycle. They weren't a gang or anything. They were just motorcycles, you know, moving through downtown Chicago. And I forget what street it was on. But anyway, the cop walked halfway across the street, you know, not all the way up on the motorcyclist, but he walked at least halfway up on the motorcycle, took his cup of coffee, and just threw it in the guy's face while he was on his bike moving, you know. And I'm saying, wow, this is crazy. Chicago police just gotten through with a federal investigation on the behavior of the police. Then suddenly we get this guy, this rogue police officer, and he throws a large cup of coffee in the face of a motorcyclist who wasn't doing anything but just, you know, cruising the street and following all the laws. He was just pissed off and angry and decided to throw his cup of coffee in this guy's face. Luckily, the guy had on his helmet, and luckily there wasn't a lot of traffic or there wasn't a lot of this, because that could have been a lot worse. You know, I mean, the guy could have had an accident because of the coffee being thrown in his face. He could have fell down. He could have got ran over. But this is a serious charge. You know, this happened soon after there was a scathing report on the Chicago Police Department. And you wonder why, you know, and you wonder why that Chicagoans do not respect police officers, do not like police officers, do not get along with police officers. Because the majority of these, I was talking to my son last night about police officers in the city of Chicago, because it's all over the news, it's all over the internet, it's online. You can find all kind of horrible things being said about the police officers, and a lot of those things are warranted. You know, but this is just crazy. This Chicago police are conducting an internal investigation into an incident caught on video in which an officer throws a cup of coffee at a passing motorcyclist after the biker shouted at the cop near a downtown intersection. Police Superintendent Eddie Johnson said Monday that he cannot defend this officer's actions after watching the 40-second video. Police are not identifying the officer. They don't have to identify the officer. We know what the hell he looks like because we see the video. I'm thinking they're talking about they're not going to tell us his name. you know, because he's all over the internet. It's gone viral. So we know what he looks like. And we know that he's on the Chicago Police Department. We're gonna find out his name later, because there's this thing such as a Freedom of Information Act. Okay, this is Eddie Johnson, the superintendent of police, and I'm quoting, we expect every officer to be professional and treat people fairly and responsibly. Police don't do that. Not in the city of Chicago. You know, and it's just so ironic that this happened, and there had just been a federal investigation that went on for a whole year at the Chicago Police Department, and suddenly this happens. This was a white officer. When you look at the video, you see a white officer throwing a cup of coffee. I'm presuming hot coffee on a motorcyclist. And the motorcyclist was also white. You know, and there were witnesses everywhere, all around the place. The guy had to be out of his mind to do that. You know, he had to be totally gone fucking nuts to do that. Now, there's no doubt about it. He's going to lose his job over this. I mean, he has to, because he has to be made an example for other officers in the Chicago Police Department. So he's going to lose his job for this. If he doesn't, then people are going to riot. I don't know if they're going to do that or anything, but I would think he would lose his job for this. I mean, not just taking his gun and taking his badge and then putting him on desk duty. He needs to be out of the force. You know, too many police officers in the city of Chicago are just, a lot of these guys think they're macho. They think they're tough. You know, they think they're better than the guy and girl who walks the street, who goes to work every day or goes to school. They think, I mean, they have police powers and they use them. Some police officers misuse them. And that's where they get caught at, when they misuse their power that they have over the public. You know, because they're wearing a gun, they're wearing a badge. And we are supposed to do what they tell us to do. And things like that. But sometimes people do not do what police officer tell them to do, because they don't feel like they have to, or they feel as though they did not do anything. And then a police officer gets pissed off, takes out his gun and shoots. Suddenly he loses his job. The city gets sued and they raise more taxes. But this is crazy, folks. I mean, this is nutty. And as I've said yesterday on the show, Chicago crime in January 2017 is starting to outpace the number of killings and shootings of January 2016. And the police department has promised to be better than they were in 2016. But I don't see where better is happening. I mean, you've had so many shootings already in the city of Chicago. What the hell are they doing? I mean, it's not funny, folks, and it's not a laughing matter. It's not, humor shouldn't be in it. But, you know, this is just something that I don't know. They're just going to have to deal with it. They're going to have to fix. I've said for months the reason why the crime is high in Chicago, because we got politicians that do not give a damn. Although I've heard earlier today that the Chicago Police Department, they are going to make solving these murders and crimes, or preventing these murders and crimes in the city of Chicago, their top priority. They should have done that years ago. Maybe they've been listening to this thing several times on several days that the mayor and the superintendent and Chicago Police Department should stop everything that they're doing and make solving these crimes, getting these numbers down, their number one priority. Hopefully they have been listening to the show. If they haven't been listening to the show and they figured this shit all on their own, congrats to them. But they have to make crime the number one priority in this city right now, because it's driving everything. It's driving people from the city. It's driving up property taxes. It's driving up food. I mean, it's affecting everything. You can't sleep in your house. I mean, you can't sit by the window. You can't walk by the window in certain neighborhoods in the city of Chicago for fear of a bullet coming through and hitting you. Children are afraid to sleep by the window. Fear of a bullet coming and hitting them while they're sleeping in bed. They have to make crime in the city of Chicago their number one priority. And not just say it, but let us see it. Let us see what you're doing. Let us see some effort, some progress on bringing this shit down. Because this year, 2017, is starting off the same way January of 2016 started off. We don't want that, but it's happening. Yeah, I totally agree with Chicago Police Department taking guns off the street, arresting these bad guys. But like I said yesterday, when you lock up one guy, bad guy, take them off the street, another one grows, comes along. They're like weeds. You snatch out one, another one grows in its place. I've said this several times, I have the solutions for solving crime in the city of Chicago. And that is, and I've said it several times on the show, months back, years back, I've said it several times, go to the most dangerous neighborhoods in the city of Chicago and have officers in those places 24/7. No patrolling, because if you're patrolling, you might miss something because you're riding around, you're driving around every 30 minutes, every 10 minutes or whatever. And the bad guys see this. Well, the cops are gone. Let's do this. Oh, here they come back. Let's lay low. It has to be a 24-hour presence. If you feel that your cops are not doing their job, if you feel like you don't have the manpower, there is the National Guard. You can call the federal government for help. Not just in money. You can have the U.S. Army over there. If the bad guys shoot at the army, I mean, these guys in uniform, they're going to shoot back. There's ways of lowering Chicago crime. Look at what Los Angeles is doing. Look at what New York is doing. Look at what a lot of these other states are doing to keep crime low. And then copy them. Find out what they're doing and copy them. Is that so horrible? I'm pretty sure that's what they're doing. They're talking probably to other mayors and governors and finding out how they are keeping crime low, but they're not enacting it, initiating it here in the city of Chicago. You guys got to throw away your pride. I mean, if another state is doing something good and that state is a lot larger and bigger than Chicago, and Chicago has more crime than those larger states, Chicago is not doing something. Oh, I've heard the excuse so many times. They have stronger gun laws than Chicago. Folks, no one in the world has stronger and tougher gun laws than the city of Chicago. These thugs in Chicago just think this city is easy pickings. That's all, because they know that the police are under scrutiny and they know that the police are somewhat hesitant to do their jobs because they're afraid of winding up on YouTube. They're afraid of winding up on somebody's phone. They're afraid of losing their jobs. They're afraid of that they may get the city in trouble by the city being sued. I mean, if you got officers out there that are afraid to do their jobs, they should quit, resign, and let someone come in that's going to do the job better than they have. And I say this all the time. Do not hold up progress. If you're afraid to do the job, if you're afraid to go over there and pull out your gun when you think you need to pull it out, if you're afraid to tase someone who is totally acting erratically and totally need tasing, then you should quit. If you're afraid to answer a domestic violence call because you're afraid that you might get shot, then quit. If you're afraid to stop someone on the street who looks like a bad guy that you figure may have a gun because you are going to have to do a lot of paperwork, then quit. Simple as that. And let somebody come on and do the job who are not afraid to do their job. Of course, police officers, there's no doubt about it, folks. Police officers in the city of Chicago and all around America, they have a tough job. It's a rough job, and it can be a deadly job. They can wind up losing their lives if they don't know what they're doing, if they're not trained properly. They can lose their lives. There's no doubt about it, but you cannot. I'm pretty sure they have been told all of this before they actually sign up to get the job, before they take the exam and go through all the training. They've been told all of this. So when you put on that uniform, you are expected to answer calls, even if it's in some of these rugged neighborhoods, high crime neighborhoods. And I applaud the police for, confiscating so many guns from some of these really, really high crime neighborhoods where the bad guys have taken over the neighborhood. They are in complete control of the neighborhood. And that's not right. The bad guys should never be in complete control of anything. But in some spots in the city of Chicago, the bad guys are in control, and that should be that shouldn't be, put it that way. That should not be. And I applaud the police officers for being brave enough to go into some of these areas and confiscate as many as 100 and 200 guns. But still, the killing goes on. Still, people are dying for no good reason, for no good cause, only because the bad guy wants to go out and shoot someone. And it's a damn shame. You can talk about jobs. You can talk about being low income. You can talk about the disadvantage. You can talk about the uneducated, giving more schools, more stores and all that. You're still going to have the bad element out there. You're still going to have that person out there that's going to go out and kill somebody, shoot somebody because they like it. They love it. It's what they do. You can try to, talk to the kids while they're growing up to make sure that they don't join any gangs or, go buy a gun or someone actually gives them a gun. That happens a lot, because a lot of these guys don't have money to buy a gun. They're in a gang. Someone gets the gun for them, but the city of Chicago has to make solving crime, bringing down these statistics, and they have done it, their first priority, nothing else. Instead of getting on TV and making speeches, get out there in the neighborhoods and stop the bad guys from intimidating and killing the residents of that neighborhood. Because like I just got through saying, some of these neighborhoods are actually controlled and dominated by bad guys all over the place. And the police, they're just pretending like it's not there. They don't see it. But now that their asses are in hot water from this federal investigation, they're going out there and seizing all of these weapons and arresting these bad guys. I don't think if it wasn't for this federal investigation, they would have done that. They wouldn't have done it. I've said all along that the police department know where the bad guys are. They know who the bad guys are. But yet, at some point, they will not do anything about it. They know that the bad guys are selling drugs. They know that the bad guys are into sex trafficking. They know the bad guys have guns. They know the bad guys have killed people. Why not go in there and arrest their asses and get them off the fucking streets? This is what has been done so far, but it needs to be done a lot more because the bad guys are... I mean, how would you feel if you couldn't walk out of your house to the store? How would you feel if you couldn't go out and sit on your front porch or hang around in your own backyard? How would you feel if you could not stand next to your window? How would you feel if your kid is shot sitting at the table eating breakfast? That would piss you off. And I'm getting pissed off the more I talk. We have to make solving crime in the city of Chicago the first priority. There is no doubt about that.
Heaven help the child who never had a home. Heaven help the girl who walks the streets alone. Heaven help the roses if the bombs begin to fall. Anyone who never saw. Heaven help the black man if he struggles one more day. Heaven help the white man if he turns back away. Heaven help the man who kicks the man who has to crawl.
Everybody, the George Wilder Jr. Show is just about off the air. I hope you guys join me tomorrow. I hope you had a great time on the show today. Tomorrow we should have some very, very interesting guests on the show. I hope you tune in for that. All right. Bye-bye, everybody. Hope you join me tomorrow on the George Wilder Jr. Show. You were great. I love you. Bye-bye.